So, let's begin. So we, in the Shari Yosher, we are on page Gimel, which is page 6 in the book. And I'm going to read mine out of the book, so I can see the chats at the same time. Last time we asked the question, how does it work, the concept of Shibud HaGuf. Shibud HaGuf is the my personal obligation. I have a personal obligation, so then, what do I have to do? What makes me liable to pay back this personal obligation? Let's say I borrowed money and the money's not around, or I accept by myself a personal obligation through a commitment which I made. So, what makes me obligated to pay back? So, last week with Shimon, we saw said that maybe it's because of the mitzvah, which is there's a mitzvah priyas bachov to pay back a person. Because of a pasuk, so it's a bit difficult to say that, because obviously if it's all based on a pasuk, the question is what happened before you had the pasuk? Was there no such thing as a personal commitment? What happens if for some reason the pasuk doesn't apply? So is there no such thing as a personal commitment in that case? So what he wants to say here on page Gimel in the second paragraph in base is v'nei rishon alein lochiyah. First, you have to prove the inyan zeh shel shibud haguf, that this concept of shibud haguf, of personal obligation upon the person, guf means literally body, but your means upon the person, u'gam kechiv mama, is also monetary obligation. Shibud mechaveh between a man and his fellow man, below mitzvah greater, and not just the mitzvah. And we can pull this mikama rayos mukrachos from several definite proofs. Because in the manner in which shibud haguf, an obligation, devolves upon a person, we find two manners in which this is possible. The one way is the Torah putting an obligation upon you. And the second manner is that which a person obligates himself with a new obligation. The chiyuv chadash zeh. And this new obligation, Yitzchadesh, will become newly incumbent upon him, by the manners in which one makes transactions, Zheniknim, through which one acquires, or divests, Ayadam, through them, Metalti Marcos, either movable objects or real estate. Shehen, and here he gives an example, two examples, Kinyan Sudor. Kinyan Suda means chalifin, like when on Erev Pesach, before Erev Pesach, you can give the Rav the right to sell your chametz. So he acquires the right to sell your chametz by giving you a pen, which you pick up, and then that obligates you, so to speak, to have the Rav serve as your agent. That's a personal obligation. You can also sell something to the Rav in the same way. Let's say actually want to sell your chametz to the Rav, even as opposed to just appointing him an agent. It would work the same way. When somebody gets married and they accept upon themselves the obligation of the ksuba, so then the way it's done is that usually one of the Edim in the Masada Kiddushin gives to the chosan a pen, which he picks up, and then, or a handkerchief or something, and that is the manner in which he obliges himself, obligates himself to the ksuba. So these are all ways in which one accepts a personal obligation. And the question is, of course, what does it mean? What's the significance that I picked up a handkerchief or a pen, and now all of a sudden you own my object, or I am obligated to you in some way, shape, or form? It seems very strange. And yet, the halacha is full of cases like this. How does it work? And the other way in which he says, here is a shtar. A shtar is a similar idea. If I write you an IOU, that obligates me now to pay you whatever I wrote in the IOU. So again, just because I wrote down in a document that I owe you money, now I have to pay you? Why? How should I work? Why should I work? Why should I be the case? Doesn't seem to be necessarily logical, does it? Now, of course, we know that it is logical, because that's what society as accepted upon itself. But in theory, what is the rationale behind my writing down something being a manner in which I obligate myself. Was rationale my picking up a pen being a manner in which I obligate myself? Okay, is that we all clear on the question here? Since we're only three of us here. Yep. Okay, that's one. Yep. Oh, yes. Okay, excellent. Okay, so let's go further. Concerning documents of kinyanim, of transactions in which one either acquires or divests, the shabit nafshe, that you put a lien upon yourself. So too in bar mitzia and parakah zov davin ches, lien shomer hekdeshos karkaos, in terms of a person who becomes a shomer, on something a watchman on hekdesh, on something which is belongs to base hamikdash, or karkaos, and or real estate. B'shekonamiyado, he says, works because konamiyado they made a king nechalivin with him. V'chein b'sav v'sachas apolim also b'mitzia. The master shomer chinam yos kishola, where a shomer chinam, person watches for free, who has very few obligations, right? Because he's a free watchman, he can accept upon himself to be like a borrower who has many many more obligations in terms of, for example, if an omas, an act of God occurred, or a theft, or a loss, in all these cases, a shoel is chayav, a shomer chinam is potter. So if a shomer chinam accepts upon himself to be like a shoel, so he's chayav under many more circumstances. So all these cases are this case as well is a case where a person becomes obligated, uke shmuel, b'shekano miyado, and they made a acquisition through chalipin. B'chol shibun nechassin. And in general, says Reb Shimon, any lien on property, which is what we call nowadays a real lien, right? Because it's based on real estate, as opposed to movable objects which can be secreted away, bought, sold, destroyed. Real estate is real. But any type of lien on real estate must be preceded by a personal obligation. If there's a personal obligation, Shibun Agufta, then a Shibun Nechassin can follow. It might not. But it only can follow if there, in fact, is first the shibun nechassin, a shibun aguf, a personal obligation. And he brings down several other proofs of this sort. I don't think we have to go through all the proofs. I think let's go to the next page. If you can go back to your books and go to next, which is page Dalet or 7 in HebrewBooks.org. Gonna make sure, Ron, Yossi, you have the next page. He didn't answer the question yet. This is all just a lead up to the answer. The answer is coming on this page. Okay. So we're not there yet. So I just want to point out what Reb Shimon does, and again, we're not there at the answer yet. At the end of this paragraph, which began on page Gimel, goes on to page Dalet, is he proves that there's a difference between a promise and an obligation. A promise is just verbal. And unless it goes through with one of the standard ways in which you make a kinyan, it doesn't create an obligation. You might be a despicable person, don't keep your promise, but it's not enforceable in a court. He says at the end of the paragraph, because the muchak v'mechiv mamon in any monetary relation ikamakne, there's a person who is selling or divesting, the kona, a person who's buying or acquiring, the dover anikne, and something which is being acquired. Okay, so that is in all cases how a kinyan works. Sometimes the vehicle is the thing which is being acquired, meaning the shtar or the pen, even though the pen goes back. But in the symbolic transfer, I pick the pen, you get my property. But there is no such thing as a kinyan on a promise. The kinyan has to be on a specific obligation and take place through the means of a physical activity. Now, he says that in the next paragraph, he speaks about other issues, which we're not going to get into right now. So I want to skip now to the paragraph which begins, Nirlanius Daiti. Speech is not a physical activity. There's a modern sentence that says, Akimas Fasayim Ave Maisa. But that is only in terms of testifying in court, in terms of whether that might be considered a Maisa or not a Maisa. But for things which require real kinyonim, speech is never considered to be a physical activity. A physical activity means a manifestation in actual tangibility, not in the abstract, which speech is considered. I said by speech, you have this concept of a smachta. Smachta means where I make a exaggerated promise, which has no bearing in halacha, because everybody knows that people say things which they don't always mean. You have to have a kinyan. Even then, there is no such thing as, a good point, I have to repeat the questions. Even then, when there's a, so you hear answer the question, why speech is not a physical phenomenon. So the concept of a kinyan is taking speech and making it tangible. Speech in and of itself is an intangible. Therefore, it's not obligating. Made tangible is obligating. Even then, the concept of smachta, when I exaggerate so much that even tangibility, making a maisa kinyan, a hand, well, shaking on it, the question about a handshake. A handshake is an interesting question. Let's leave it aside for a minute. Get back to maybe tonight, maybe next time, the status of a handshake in halacha. But the point is, which I wanted to make is that if something is an extraordinary exaggeration, then even making a kinyan on it has no bearing. It's not going to help. It's not going to be significant. Why? Because a kinyan of transaction can solidify something which has real reality to it. If I promise you $1 million, and I write an IOU for $1 million, but it's clearly absurd because I don't have $1 million, so then that's called an asmachta. Asmachta means that I cannot be considered serious unless we go to an even greater extent. What's the greater extent I have to go? I have to actually put the money on the table. That's the only thing why gambling is considered to be an asmachta, because everybody thinks they're going to win, and nobody thinks they're going to lose, so therefore, unless the money's actually on the table, it's not considered to be a kinyan, what you gain in gambling, because nobody really believes that they're going to, or nobody wants to believe, or people deny that there actually is a chance that they're going to lose. So anyway, is that for the casino then? Is the question asked? No, because I think in a casino they actually have chips, which you might have to buy in order to be able to gamble. So putting the chips on the table is like putting money on the table, I think. The cop-out for a casino would be dina machusa dina. So therefore, if it's recognized by the government, so then that's it. Doesn't matter what halacha says, because dina machusa dina has to be taken account even by halacha. I'm not sure what the question Ron is asking. The dealer stealing the chips? I don't know what you mean by the dealer stealing the chips. He's not stealing the chips. The chips are on the table. They put the players purchase chips. They put them on the table. That means they're willing to risk them. Yeah, in fact, you don't want to transfer them. I see now what you're saying. You don't want to transfer them. That doesn't matter. Once you put it on the table, then that's real. If you just kept it in your pocket and you betted, it's not real. But once you put your money on the table, that's considered to be real. And therefore, you whether you want to transfer them or not, you put them, so to speak, into play. And that's too bad. You can't get it. In that case, even in halacha, it's legit. Okay, so let's go start this paragraph here on page 7, Dalit. The second paragraph, the paragraph begins the second column. Real as in legitimate, yes, real as in legitimate. The Ne'arani is Daiti. It seems to me, the Inyan Shibur HaGuf, the concept of Shibur HaGuf, the personal obligation, the Chokhivim Mammon, in all monetary obligations, Hudin Mishpati, it is a halacha, which is based on justice. Interesting. Sha'adam mechuyav v'omei, that a person is obligated, lamtzim inechosav, to make available from his property, l'chaveru, to his friend, kach v'kach, so and so much, depending on the obligation. Shechiv z'chiv mishpati, that this obligation is a just obligation, gam b'li mitzvah satara, even without the mitzvah of the Torah. Kishen shesuga kinyanim, just like the nature, the quality, the categories of kinyanim, of transactions, the chukei b'ali minichosim, and the laws or the parameters of owners in property, udover mishpati, was a matter which has to do with justice in and of itself. Gambli asos musikso, in without the prohibition of don't steal. Kishmar be'el, like explained in the first chapter, the loyitachem b'shupanim lamar, you cannot say, the inyan, there's no way you can say, that the concept, mash omim yachsim achepetz ruvein, that that which we attribute an object to Reuven, who may chamas, is only because Shimon Musar al pi Torah, Shimon is warned by the Torah, Shelo l'gzoz l'mimenu, not to steal it from him. In other words, my object is only mine because you're not allowed to take it. Rather, el davar behipuch, the matter is the opposite. The Isser Gezela, prohibition of theft, is after achlotas ha'inyan, after matters determined the chukei gvul ha'bailim, according to the parameters of the boundaries of ownership. Kamoche nireh, so that he says, k'am mitzvah spiyas ba'achov, the mitzvah to pay an obligate your creditor, u'achar achlotas inyan achov, comes post the determination of the nature, the concept of the obligation, a PD Mishmati based on independent justice. Shimcha Ruvain, if there devolves on Ruvain, Chiyuv Tashlumin, and obligation to pay, Misug Chugei HaMishpat, from the concept, or from the category, of the laws of justice, also Sifa Torah is Hara, then the Torah added a warning, U Mitzvah, Vishmor, to watch, to pay his obligation in which he is obligated, based on the laws of justice. Besides that, there's a Torah issue. Now, what Rana asks, is this then touching on the idea of morality independent from the Torah, as opposed to morality as defined by the... personality defined by Torah? So the answer is yes. And now we discuss it. And even though at first glance, Dover Tamur, it's an astonishing thing. What compelling reason the chiyuv, an obligation, al adam, devolves on a person, yes, should there be, how can it possibly be that there you have to do something without the Torah commanding you to do something? Right? It would seem that all of our obligations and requirements emanate from the Torah itself. So what it says in Shimon, you might think what it's saying is very strange. No. It says, Avok Shenanik Min Yon Eitev. When we go deeply into this, Yesh Lavin In Yon Zeh. You can understand this concept. Darei Gam Achiyuv Achreach. Because also it's one of my favorite lines in all of halachic literature. Gam Achiyuv Achreach. Also the obligation and compelling reason, la'avodas Hashem, to serve Hashem, u'malos utzoni yizborach, and to fulfill the ratzon Hashem, u'gamkein chiyuv v'echreach, is also required and compelled, al-pi mishpat ha'seichel, based on the justice of logic, v'akorah, and recognition. K'mochein, so too, hu chiyuv v'shibur ha'momon, is the obligation and the Hashem would retrans his obligation as well, but the lien Hu chiyu mishpat, the Mount Eilim, hu chiyu mishpati. It is an obligation which is rooted in justice. Shenishayeva bitachat kinyanim, which you became obligated through either the manners of kinyanim, or shivas Torah, or the Torah itself required it, in a zakim like damages, opinion of ben, and redemption of firstborn, chadayna. And in terms of this, you need to have somebody who acquires this right. Now, Ron asked, but the Torah doesn't command us to eat. I'm not sure what to do with that question. Can you explain that question to me? But let me, as you're writing, let me reiterate what Rabbi Shimon said. Rabbi Shimon says that, I'd like to give an example of this, which is that the Bahag, the Baal HaKadosh, one of the Goyim, says that Emunah Hashem is not one of the Tayag Mitzvahs. Because before you have, you can't obligate somebody to believe. Once he believes, you can obligate him in all the other mitzvahs. But you can't obligate Emunah. The Rambam disagrees, and Rambam holds it's one of the mitzvahs, because Rambam holds that Emunah is, to, the mitzvah of Emunah is to deepen one's awareness and knowledge of Hashem. But be that as it may, the point is the same point here. There is a certain precondition to Torah. And that precondition is logic. And that logic is what leads to Emunah. Now, the same thing says Rav Shimon is true about Medina Mamas, about monetary law. They're based on natural law, on logic. And then the Torah comes and says, you know what? Besides all your logical obligations, we're going to slap some Torah prohibitions or obligations on it as well. So Ron says, it is pashut that there are things we need to do that are not commanded in Torah. Although, I guess eating is part of Shemira Sagu. Well, I don't know you're obligated to eat. Who told you're obligated to eat? You're obligated to survive. Now it's commit suicide. We don't have to eat. We can have IV, whatever the point may be. I don't think that's necessarily the same lines as what Rav Shimon is saying. Perhaps you could say that there are certain types of things like not killing, which are logical without the Torah. And for example, Cain was punished for having killed Hevel, even though the commandment not to kill is not given. So there are certain things which are just logical. They have, later on, the penalties, the nature of the sin, the nature of the punishment, and Shamayim, that the Torah would give us. But that this is wrong, or conversely, what is right, can't actually, yes, should precede the Torah. Because our Luthers, when they tell us that if not the Torah being given, we would have learnt sneers, modesty from an ant, not from an ant, from a cat, and chalitzus, that's the exact word, but diligence from an ant, and so on and so forth. Yes, there's natural things. There's a natural concept, natural reason, which it precedes the Torah. And one asks, how could we do our one right? Not kill based on observing nature, animals kill time. First of all, there is a chazal, which we don't have to accept as literal, but there is not a chazal, I think it's really shown in places, who says that before the mabul, the animals were all vegetarians. But that's, I don't think that makes a difference, because obviously a person is not killing for food. Another person. And if they kill for food another person, you could have such an argument. But no species kill each other for food, they kill other species for food. So I'm not sure that would be the case. But even, let's say they still killed over mates, though, could be that maybe logical not preclude that. But it's not because, I take that back. It's not because observation that Hashem teaches things. It's because logic also teaches things. And it's interesting that Rabbi Yochanan, the Mir Mashgiach, writes that the Torah was only given 2,448 years after the world was created. And the Torah is kind of like a b'di'evet. L'chatchila, Hashem said, listen, I gave you a brain. Use your brain. Use your intellect. And that's because Chazal tells us that the ultimate intellects were the avos who fulfilled the entire Torah before it was given, meaning that they, not that they necessarily fulfilled every last thing, but they used their brain to perceive what should be done and what shouldn't be done and how to proceed in this life according to the will of their Creator. So, really, the brain is the first line of perceiving the will of God and what's good and what's right. Akron perceived chukim. Well, the Maharal says that all chukim, I mean, many say this, almost everybody, the Maharal said maybe we're starting on, all chukim have reasons to them. It's just that we don't necessarily perceive those reasons automatically because our intellect doesn't necessarily cover them. But the avos had, or somebody has a superior intellect, would be able to perceive chukim. Now, I don't know if that I don't know if that's literally true or not because I've never been one of the avos. So I don't have that type of intellect. But that's what's stipulated by almost all the sources, that the chukim have that capacity. But, you know, you can make an argument that chukim is a necessity of a nation. We have to have in the chukim, as this is Reb Sadigon's argument, really. He says chukim don't necessarily have intrinsic reasons, but nations have to have uniform behavior. And chukim are given for that purpose. But Mishpatim, Reb Shimon is saying, are all preceding, they're prior to the Torah. Even B'nai Noach, the Noach who are required to keep dinim, that really doesn't mean, it really means to impose by court the logic of just law. This is based on historical events, like Amor Kamir, you're right, that's something which we require the Torah to give us. Although we see that so this is not for tonight. Avraham Avinu and ate matzahs on the night of Pesach. Yitzhak made a korban Pesach. So it's not so simple. It could be historical events occur. The cause and effect might be because historical events occur because of the quality of the day. Or the historical events have an impact before they happen. In any event, I think I want to finish here for tonight. Because it's a significant amount of new conceptuality. And go over it again. Next week, we can go a little bit further with this notion. So I think that we should end the recording here for now. I guess there's still one more question. Then, if the logic comes to conclusion about justice is contrary to halacha, means our logic is wrong. Yes, it means our logic is wrong. But that's not from here. You're welcome, Yossi. It's not from here necessarily because here it just tells us that. There is a logic which precedes Torah, and that Torah takes that logic into account. Sometimes Torah might tell us, you know, that's logical, but don't do it anyway for XYZ reason. But generally speaking, yes, we assume that our logic is wrong when it's against halacha. Okay? Yes, I think we should stop.